I think the best part about playing this is the new intro to the hour is getting a smiley face from Jeff Cook from Back to the Bars. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate that. Good to know somebody's listening. Anyway, it's Bowerly on News Radio 930 WBEN. I want to call your attention to something. Every now and again, people I know send me things and say, hey, Tom, could you give us a little bit of publicity? So Assemblyman David DiPietro is doing his fifth annual Sportsman's Night. And it is actually going to be tonight at the Arrowhead Golf Club. You know where the Arrowhead Golf Club is? It's on Clarence Center Road in Akron. And among the people will be State Senator George Borrello, Roger Stone. I'd like to ask Roger Stone a few questions about the Kennedy assassination. And Bruce Johnston with Niagara Frontier Gun Show. And the event begins at 5:30, dinner at 7 o'clock. And for more information, you can call 548-6560. And, periodically when I can, I like to work these things in. Did a lot of stuff with the Citizens Against Wind Turbines in Lake Erie and other organizations. I've been talking about the situation with respect to Israel and Hamas and intelligence gathering in particular. And I just wonder how much of this could have been prevented. There had to have been an intelligence hole. I don't know any other way to phrase it that comes to mind immediately. Let's go to Joe in Cheektowaga. Joe, you are on WBEN. Hello.
Tom, good afternoon.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just want to throw some opinions out there and a little bit of different perspective. I mean, we do have confirmation that Egypt did indeed warn Tel Aviv about a potential impending attack. I mean, this has been confirmed by Representative Michael McCaul, Representative of Texas. He said, quote, "We know that Egypt had warned the Israelis 3 days prior to an event like this could happen." So you've talked about it. And I mean, Mossad's intelligence is one of the most advanced on the face of the earth. I mean, they basically know what you're going to do it before it happens, before you even think about doing it. So in my opinion, this was allowed to take place and this was allowed to be carried out. In order for Benjamin Netanyahu to push this, you know, this ethnic cleansing campaign further and to completely eradicate the Palestinian people. That's, I think that's the play here with all this. Anytime something like this happens, you have to be like, well, who benefits from something like this? And I just think that, I mean, the Israeli regime in this sense. And there's a couple other, you know, points.
Well, I would like to, if I might interject, I would like to butt in. Look, I don't support terrorism, and I don't support any innocent civilians being killed, whether they be Muslim, Palestinian, Jews, whatever. But what Israel has done with its blockade of Gaza, I think that you can make a very strong argument that it has been inhumane and that this situation, in part, the Israelis bear responsibility for it happening. And I know it's not going to be real popular with some people, but look, the United States, prior to the attack on Pearl Harbor, we put an oil embargo against the Japanese Empire and other economic sanctions against the Japanese Empire. And you could make the argument that we, in the United States, through FDR's foreign policy, kind of made Pearl Harbor or an attack in the Dutch East Indies inevitable. So, I mean, this blockade has been going on since, what, like 2007, 2006, somewhere in there. And I don't think this ever should have been allowed to happen. I mean, where has the United Nations been? Where have our administrations been? For as much as we may have a soft spot in our heart about Israel, I think that you could make the argument that Israel has not exactly acted in a completely angelic manner when it comes to Gaza. Do you disagree with that?
No, I mean, this is kind of what I wanted to get into, and it is compare. And when it comes down to this, this whole narrative, and you were kind of talking about it last hour about, I've kind of been taken aback a little bit by some of the things that I've been hearing at the station about this whole topic, to be honest, about the pro-Israel sentiment and everything like that. And we're constantly bombarded with this Holocaust narrative, how it's the worst thing to ever happen in the universe. Everybody's a Nazi if you criticize Jews. But yet they have no problem keeping 2.1 million people in the largest concentration camp in the world. And Zionist neocons in the media are talking about turning the Gaza Strip into glass. So hold on a second. I thought the Holocaust was the worst thing to ever happen. But now you have Jews in the media that are saying we need to level the Palestinians. I don't know if you saw a video of those the Jewish rally in NYC, all these people are saying, wipe Gaza off the map. We want to build casinos, completely turn them into dust. And I don't support terrorism either. But if you or I were born and raised in the Gaza Strip, we might want to shoot rockets at Israel as well.
No, I don't support that way of thinking. And unfortunately, you know, here we are. I mean, look, you're raising some good points. I think we'd like to think that people all wear white hats and all wear black hats, but human nature is filled with duality and filled with various shades of gray. And anybody talking about turning Gaza and the people who live there into a sheet of glass, tell me how that is different than what the Nazis did in what is now the Czech Republic after the assassination of Heydrich, where they leveled two villages in Czechoslovakia simply because the people who had assassinated Heydrich were traced in some way, shape, or form to those villages. So I do not disagree with your premise, but why this was allowed to happen? Was this some conspiracy in order to give the Israelis cover in order to perpetrate acts of inhumanity on the Palestinians? That, and I'm not trying to take an easy way out, that's above my pay grade, my friend. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I just think the it points in that direction. I mean, I know you had referenced that how the Nazis would call Jews vermin and all that type of stuff, but, I mean, the Israel and the Jews, they're not innocent in all this. That's another point that I want to make here. It's like, I just saw a video of a rabbi the other day who called Muslims orcs. So they have it, and they call us goyim. They call us Gentiles. Well, Gentile is already another category from them, but they call us goyim or cattle. So it's like they do have a tendency to dehumanize their enemy. This is not just a Nazi thing.
No, not,
they call
well,
Muslims,
you know what,
orcs.
I think I guess the older I become, the more I realize that that using words like using universal words like they and them and us and ours is kind of counterproductive, because I agree with you. You cannot dehumanize people and expect to have a good outcome. And what do you think the answer? What do you think the answer is in the long term? Because clearly, turning Gaza into a sheet of glass and building casinos is not going to happen. It cannot happen, and one could only imagine the repercussions and ramifications if anything like that were to happen. What do you do about the situation? Because look, I'll be the first to tell you, nobody wears the white hat. Nobody wears the black hat. There's shades of gray everywhere.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a very complicated issue. It's just been going on for 75 years or more at this point. I don't know what you do here, because these two factions in particular, they can't get along. And I feel like that the Muslims do have a grievance. Their land was taken by Israel. And I mean, if someone came here and colonized the North Towns and kicked everybody out, and then they kept everybody in the South Towns and walled us in and bombed us from time to time, or dropped white phosphorus on us, or cut off our water. I don't know how you have a solution to that, to be quite honest. I mean, unmovable force and a movable object or whatever, unstoppable force, a movable object.
I know what you're trying to say. And one would think that this situation could have and should have been successfully negotiated many years ago. But in terms of, you know, your overall point, if you treat people like subhumans, and if you make their lives difficult, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. And I'm the kind of guy who I don't want to see anybody innocent, whether they're Jews, Muslim, dead. And look, Muslims have had their share of genocides committed against them as well. In the Crusades, horrible genocides against Muslims. In our own time, Bosnia, horrible genocides against Muslim. And even going beyond that, you can go to the Turkish genocide against the Armenians during the First World War. And all of these, I think we can agree that all of these genocides are absolutely criminal. And I also might add in, too, our own government's genocide and lying to the Native Americans, the First Nations of this country. Unfortunately, as I said, nobody wears the white hat. I wish I could tell you that I thought, okay, one side is totally innocent and the other side is completely evil, but real life doesn't work that way. There are a lot of gradations and shades of gray. Now, my own personal biases, I think you should know what my biases are, okay? I have a disproportionate number of Jewish friends. If you looked at my DNA, you would find that I am partially Jewish. But if you'd also look a little closer, I have a lot of relatives in Turkey and Iran and some of the Middle Eastern countries as well. So I'm like a mishmash of everything. But what I want is justice for everybody. I don't know if that's possible in this old world of ours, but let me get back to Joe in Cheektowaga for his final thoughts. Joe, back to you, sir. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to point out, I just with the point that I have a hard time listening to this constant browbeating about the Holocaust narrative and is like Warsaw Ghetto Nazi narrative, but they have no problem doing that to their enemies. And that's one of the points. And with this atrocity propaganda that we've been seeing, and I know you talked about this yesterday, with there's been no actual evidence of this, the 40 decapitated babies that and that's not happened. Like, we haven't actually had real confirmation of this, and there's been a lot of this atrocity propaganda similar to Russia bombing orphanages and the gassing of the Syrians and the incubator thing I think you brought up.
Yes.
We've seen a lot of this in the media.
And you know what, sir? One of the things that I've been trying to stress, and I hope successfully, is that in a war situation, the first casualty is the truth. And as you heard yesterday on this show, I remember that young lady from Kuwait going before Congress and perjuring herself, talking about, oh, I saw Iraqi soldiers ripping Kuwaiti babies off of incubators and throwing them away and taking the incubators back. It never happened. It was a lie. It was propaganda. And during the First World War, German troops bayoneting Belgian babies and roasting them over fires. Unfortunately, propaganda and misinformation, disinformation, fake news is unfortunately always a part of combat. It always will be. As Sun Tzu once said, before the war is won on the battlefield, it's won in the temples, and it's won through propaganda. I thank you for the call. I appreciate hearing from you, sir.
Have a good day, Tom. Thank you.
You bet. We're not going to solve the Middle Eastern question today, but certainly take your calls on it. And, it would be such an easy world if I could sit here and say, yes, one side is totally right, the other side is totally wrong. As a general rule, if you listen to this show, I hope it is loud and clear to you that I detest all atrocities against any innocent people, and that includes Palestinians, it includes Muslims, it includes Arabs, okay? Human beings. I've got a soft spot in my heart for human beings. What can I say? I know you might not believe that sometimes, but I do. It's 27 minutes after 4 at News Radio 930 WBEN. It is Bowerly with you on a Thursday. All righty. Welcome. It is Bowerly News Radio 930 WBEN Loves. Talking about the situation, Hamas, Israel, thousands of people dead. And as our previous caller pointed out, you know, there are so many situations in the world, and I think this is one of them, where nobody is wearing the totally white hat and nobody is wearing the totally black hat. And I'm not trying to trivialize anything and say, well, you know, this reminds me of a certain TV show, but without trying to trivialize something, the point I want to make is that one of the reasons why I'm such a big fan of Deadwood, which was on HBO for three or four seasons, is that it really did an excellent job of pointing out the idea that in a civilization where lawlessness reigns supreme, that sometimes the good guys turn out to be the bad guys and vice versa, and not everybody is all good, like Seth Bullock. Not everybody was all bad, like Al Swearengen. And I wish life was a lot easier than it is to sort out, but unfortunately, that's the nature of things. I don't know how many of you have people over there who, again, just were lucky to escape the carnage and get out. And as I said, my own personal life experience and my biases, I tend to know a lot more Jews than I do Muslims or Palestinians. And that's just my own personal built-in life experience. So you should know that. So that when I speak, you understand where my biases are. But I must also stress that no matter which innocent civilian is being murdered or killed, that's not my bag. That's not my cup of tea at all, to very, very much understate the situation. Let's go to Tony in Clarence on WBEN. Tony, thanks for holding, and it is your turn. Go right ahead.
Tom, you make a lot of good points, and I appreciate that. Joe made an awful lot of good points also. One thing that they just announced about an hour ago was Tony Blinken, our Secretary of State, was shown the pictures of the decapitation of the children. 40 pictures were given to him, and he just looked away after a while. That has happened. Those pictures were shown to him. My question is this, it's philosophical. Do people have the right to live without having to fear for their lives? My second question is, do people have a right to live where they want? I'm 76 years old. I remember the formation, reading about the formation of Israel from the beginning. And ever since that time, I knew this was a disaster was waiting to happen, because what happened is the issue of forming a state for Palestinians has been put on the back burner from one prime minister in Israel to another to another. Jimmy Carter brought up the two-state solution. Obama brought up two-state solution. A lot of presidents asked Israel to consider two-state solutions. What was Israel's response? No. Right now, they blockaded not only that country, that area of Gaza, right, but they've stopped giving them food, electricity, and water. How long are these people going to last? Secondly, there are 345,000 of them that want to leave the country, that area. They have nowhere to go. Egypt refuses to take them. They have no place to go at this particular point in time. And
Jordan does as well. Your first question, do people have a right to live free from fear? President Roosevelt, in his very famous Four Freedoms speech, did say that in his ideal world, people did have a right to live free from fear, as well as enjoy freedom of speech, of worship, freedom from want. I think some of those things are, quite frankly, rather pie in the sky and not attainable on this planet. And, you know, I don't know how you feel about this, Tony, but I'm about to find out. I've heard people over the years, including Rush Limbaugh, say that, you know, when this situation is going to be resolved, it's going to be resolved when one side completely wins and the other side completely loses. And I hope that Rush is wrong on that, because it's too horrific to even contemplate, at least for me. Your thoughts, sir?
But I couldn't hear the last part of what you said. But my point is, what do you do with these 345,000 people that want to flee the country? And talking about leaving the airport, Ben-Gurion Airport, our United States is setting up charter flights to try to remove all the citizens of the United States that want to leave the country. That was brought up yesterday on one of the shows I saw, that they are trying to arrange for chartered flights. And your friend having to charter his own flight at a large cost, it just boggles my imagination. The whole situation, you could have foreseen it from 19 when it was done in 1948, and you threw these people together that have nothing in common, basically nothing in common, and a lot of them hate each other. So this was bound to happen, Tom. And I just think you have a brilliant show today. Brilliant show. Thank you.
You're very, very kind. Thank you very much, Tony. If it was brilliant, I would have solutions. Unfortunately, I'm a little bit lax on solutions, but I don't feel that bad because people with their JFK School of Government certifications and PhDs from Harvard have been unable to figure this out. I think one of the things you might consider doing is you put the people together who feel more or less the same way, and you bribe in any way possible countries where they would be most at home into taking them in and making them a part of the fabric of their society. That way you ideally would minimize stress on the individuals involved, and you'd put people into circumstances in which they were more likely to flourish than moving them to Greenland or Iceland or someplace like that. But I appreciate your kind words, but I wish I had more in the way of solutions. I just don't like to see human misery. I don't like to see human suffering. And it doesn't matter to me if they're Jewish Israelis, if they are Palestinians. It doesn't matter. And the blockade under which people in Gaza have been living, frankly, it strikes me as being inhumane. And I don't like saying those things, but sometimes you have to say what you believe in your heart. And I do believe that it is inhumane. Now, I could revert to Gandhi and an eye for an eye, and sooner or later the entire world goes blind. And that's about the best I can do as far as stock expressions that we can use. Let's go back to the calls on WBEN. And who would be next? It would be Dominic in Erie, Pennsylvania. Dominic, thanks for holding, sir. You are on WBEN. Welcome to the show, my love.
Hello. I would just like to suggest that I would very much like to know what the crew of the USS Liberty would think about what's going on currently in Israel.
Well, you're talking about the American ship that was attacked by the Israelis?
Yeah, I think
back in the 1960s. I talked to one of the survivors who actually wrote a book of the attack on the Liberty, and I can pretty much imagine what his thoughts would be on what's happening right now with Israel. Those guys felt as though they were, basically attacked by an ally, and the justice was never done for them or their families or their injuries.
I personally believe that the people that are actually in charge in that region wanted this to happen. And as you've said, it's always the innocents that pay the price and suffer.
Okay, what do you think, and this is what I'm trying to figure out, and maybe you can help me understand this, Dominic. What do you think the end game is? Because if you're trying to maneuver a situation and set up a situation on the world chessboard, if you will, what is there to gain? What's at play? Who gains, and how do they gain?
Well, the one thing that popped into my mind that I've not heard anyone else suggest, this might have something to do with Brexit. You got to remember that the petrodollar is hurting massively, and for quite a bit of time, we've basically been Israel's piggy bank. And if our dollar crashes, that's going to hurt them. If they can upheave Saudi Arabia, et cetera, and basically crush the other manipulative petrol currency, our dollar stays strong. And I suspect that might be one of the chess pieces.
I wish I knew. But a lot of people don't know about what you started off the phone call referencing, and that is the Israeli attack on the USS Liberty. 34 of our people died, 171 were injured, many of them seriously with like life-changing injuries and wounds. It was a horrific attack. I do not believe it was an accident at all. I think it was the most sinister act that the Israelis have ever committed against the United States. And as far as the motivation, I was never able to figure that out.
If that ship down, they went down, they were going to blame Egypt. That's what was going to happen. And if it wasn't for the commander saving that vessel, they were gonna pretend it was Egypt that attacked them.
Well, you know, it wouldn't be the first time in naval warfare that one side took out another ship and then claimed it was somebody else. There was a British passenger liner very early on in the Second World War that was evacuating women and children, I think, to Canada, and it was torpedoed off the coast of Ireland, and The Nazis, Goebbels and his propaganda people said, oh, that was Winston Churchill. He sank his own ship trying to generate support against Germany and in favor of the UK. And then, obviously, the explosion on the on our ship, the Maine, in Havana Harbor. We could talk about Gulf of Tonkin and the Lusitania, which, by the way, the sinking of the Lusitania was one of the incidents which brought the United States into the First World War, and the Germans said it was loaded with contraband, and what do you know, it was. Why do you think we sank the Maine in water so deep that even today's research vessels would have a challenge finding out anything forensically about what caused it to go down?
Well, a very, very wise man many years ago said, "War is a racket. Follow the dollar."
You know what? I wish I could say something that would dissuade you from that point of view, but unfortunately, money makes the world go round, and let's face it, defense contractors do very well during wartime. Research institutions do very well during wartime. We have a research institution just down the thruway, which might as well be called CIA North, RIT.
Take care, okay?
All right. Thank you. I appreciate the call. Actually, several years ago, one of the big shots at RIT was forced to step down because people were asking all kinds of questions about the intimate and cozy relationship between RIT and CIA. And I suspect if you were to look at the books today, you'd find a continuing, very close relationship between CIA and RIT. I'm just saying. Bowerly, talking about the situation in the Middle East. And my friends, I wish I had an answer for you, but look at it this way. You know how old I am, or should I say, you know how young I am. And this stuff has been going on since well before I was born, and it's going to continue, the strife in the Middle East, well after we are gone and your children and grandchildren are gone, and there doesn't seem to be any permanent resolution in sight. Maybe Rush Limbaugh was right. You know what it ends? It ends when one side wins conclusively and decisively, and the other side can't do anything about it. I'd like to think humanity has advanced past that point, but we are, at the end of the day, animals, all of us, fighting for survival and our place in the sun. Let's go to some more calls on WBEN, and it is... I don't know how to pronounce this name, Tanner. You got to help me out here. On line four,
Yep, Gone, as in Gone with the Wind, as he told me over the phone.
Okay, Gone. You're on WBEN. Gone but not forgotten. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call so quickly. I appreciate it.
Well, of course. If you could get off speakerphone, that would be a great help to me. I've got about a minute to get you started, then we'll continue after the news.
Okay. No problem, yes. I'm off my speakerphone.
Okay, go right ahead, sir.
So, I mean, I don't know if you had any questions. I wanted to first say, I heard you say the blockade over Gaza is inhumane. Well, I wanted to comment about that. Hamas are inhumane. Hamas beheading babies, kidnapping grandmas, raping women, as you've seen the past few days on Saturday. This is inhumane. The blockade is because of Hamas. Secondly, you should not ignore the fact that Egypt is controlling the entire border with Gaza. No one ever talks about Egypt in any way, shape, or form because they're not Jewish. It's very important.
Egypt just came up. Egypt, I'll be happy to talk to you after the news break here at top of the hour, but I got to put you on hold here. But as far as Egypt did allegedly give Israel a heads up that something was brewing in Gaza. And I do think, and I'm not the only person who thinks, that the blockade of Gaza is inhumane. I don't think that you did not accuse me of this, but I don't think that if you call activity inhumane because it is committed by an Israeli government that makes somebody anti-Semitic. I think it's pretty obvious I'm far from that, but I do think that war crimes are war crimes. Crimes against humanity are crimes against humanity, no matter who commits them. And we'll continue this after the break on WBEN. It is Bowerly, and we'll break and then be back to you on News Radio 930 WBEN.